Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back after the break. We will proceed with our next lecture. With us we have drama therapist and a founding member of many an association in the field of drama therapy. She launched into orbit a number of training programs. We have Sue Jennings.
Well, thank you, everybody. I'm extremely pleased to be here. And could I just ask you to do something? Could you all stamp on the floor as hard as you can? Yes, go on. Okay. So we have some rhythm in the group. Yes. Can I ask you to sway from side to side? Sway from side to side. Yeah. So we have some movement in the group. Great. That's fine. Okay, and stop. Some years ago, I was asked to take a workshop in Brazil, and would I be there at 9 a.m? And I thought it was a little workshop. And when I got there, there were 3,000 people there in an amphitheater. And I got them to do exactly that, to stamp on the floor and to sway. And out of that, we choreographed some drama. I want to make a brief mention of Faye Prendergast, who sadly died before she could finish the drama therapy training here. And Faye was an old friend of mine from many years ago, and both of us were professional performers before we got into therapeutic work. Faye as a mime artist and me as an actress. When Faye died, the drama therapy group and the whole ideas and inspiration were very, very well held by dance movement therapist Jana and art therapist Beata. And I'd like you to thank them on my behalf with a good clap because they did so much to support the work. Thank you. Now, I'm not going to be talking specifically about drama therapy. I'm going to be talking about how the arts therapies can relate to each other, can weave together, and can have some common motifs. In particular, I'm interested in the motif of the circle and also the motif of weaving, because we're always referring to the circle. We have circle dancing, we have circular painting. But let's remember that we're actually born in a circle. During the 9 months gestation, we are held within a circle. And after we're born, when we're held in our mother's arms, we're also held within the circle. So I'm going to move in between human development and artistic development to see how these things come together. Many of you will know that I have been working very hard to keep the, not exactly the purity, but the arts in their own right as central to arts therapies. Whether we're talking about dance or drama, dance movement, music and visual art and so on. And certainly in Western Europe, there is quite a move towards calling things art psychotherapy, music psychotherapy, rather than keeping the art form. And I just want us to have at the back of our minds that if we call something art or drama or music or dance psychotherapy, we are shifting its intrinsic qualities, because we're putting theories of psychotherapy as dominant theory within arts therapies, rather than the theories of the arts and the arts therapies in themselves. I also would like to include psychodrama, and I would also like to include play therapy as being part of this dialogue and debate. Somehow, for many people, the very word psychotherapy is safer than art therapy or music therapy. It's somehow respectable. But 50 years ago, it was very different. Psycho what? People would say. No. And it took a long time for psychotherapy as such to, as it were, have center stage. Now that it is, and the arts therapies are seen as more at the margins, now one route in is through being a psychotherapy. And as I say, I want to challenge that. Maybe it can come up in the discussion. So play and the arts and the arts therapies, how do they connect and how do they come together? The circle dance is probably the oldest of all the dance forms. And certainly the circle dance preceded the theatre in the round that we discovered in the amphitheatres in ancient Greece. And I understand from my Greek colleagues that in fact it was the goat dance that was the first circular ritual that then turned into circular theatre. And I was giving a speech at the Institute of Group Analysis in London and said, you do know where your circular formula has come from the goat dance of ancient Greece. And I think that gave them something to think about their origins, that it wasn't verbal in a circle at all. That was very much a 20th and 21st century development. That picture, which I'm sorry it can't be clearer, but it was taken in a very dark cave at Ajunta in India. But you can see they are dancing in a circle, and above the circle we have a musician playing. And it's at least 3 million years old. Quite an extraordinary example of a circle dance. Different images. And not only do we dance in circles, but we weave them as well. And I think this is such a typically English Victorian scene that we would see very respectably on the village green, women, of course, dancing with women. But again, from the Far East, quite by contrast, another very lovely weaving dance. And in some of the therapeutic work I've been doing in the Far East and in Southeast Asia, I've tried to build on these motifs so they're working within their own culture rather than having Western ideas imposed on them. And this is one reason I'm extremely pleased here in the Czech Republic, that you are developing your own way of doing the arts therapies rather than having an imperialistic model imposed onto you. I think the arts therapies all over the world, globally, need to develop their own identity. And maybe a next step would be for us to have a transnational conference where we can bring all our cultural identities together within the therapeutic field. Again, I said one of my motifs is the circle. And I have a circular playroom where I do play and drama therapy. I have a circular sand tray when I'm doing sand tray therapy. And I find the creative expression that's expressed within the circle is very, very different from that which is produced in lines or in rows. Shakespeare spoke of all the arts. He was a very integrative writer. He spoke of music being the food of love. I'm sure you all know that quotation. He speaks about the art. He speaks about the dance. He has many dances in his plays. And of course, the motif of the actor being a mirror for society is very important. People say to me, oh yes, but Shakespeare's old-fashioned. People don't talk like that anymore. Well, they never did talk like that. Shakespeare writes poetry. And people are amazed that I've actually worked with Shakespeare, with prisoners in long-term restraint, with people in a forensic hospital that had committed quite extreme crimes, as well as being mentally unwell, with children in primary schools, with groups of people with learning difficulties, that it seems that the great stories hold all our stories. This is just one little example of A Midsummer Night's Dream in a primary school, where the whole school took part in it. And this is a very important school because it integrates children with special needs into the school. The head teacher was a little concerned because one of the boys, he was just five, he was one of twins but had suffered lack of oxygen and therefore had some brain damage, was always screaming. And the response in the school, if he screamed, was to go... And I wondered whether we could find a drama therapeutic way to deal with the screaming. So when he started screaming in the rehearsals, I explained to him, I said, look, we don't need screaming now, but in the next scene, we do need screaming. So will you be the screamer in that scene? Had a big smile, no more screaming. And in the scene in Midsummer Night's Dream in the forest, when Bottom appears with the donkey's head on, and it says they run away screaming, he did the screaming. And we had no more difficulty. We integrated the screams. There's Lion. We did all this in Southeast Asian costume. And this boy, wonderful, wonderful as Bottom. Again, I was warned that he'd got behaviour difficulties, and they said, you know, keep him in the chorus, you know, keep him in the background, and then if he doesn't turn up, it doesn't matter. And I'd said to the children, I said, you can choose whatever part you want. It's your choice. And if we had three Titanias, then we had three Titanias. And this boy, Joe, he said, I want to be Bottom. And over his head, looking at me, the teacher was going, no. So I said to him, I said, are you sure you want to be Bottom? Because Bottom gets laughed at a lot in the play. He said, I want to be Bottom. Fine. And there he is, in his costume. And what happened in one of the performances is the stage manager had put his props in the wrong place. And he didn't have a tantrum, he didn't shout, he just went walking round, ee-aw, ee-aw, and in the end found his props and got on with the play. And I think this is a very good example of the discipline of theatre. People think sometimes that drama can get children out of control. You know, you open up a Pandora's box and what will happen? But if you think about it, all the art therapies need borders and boundaries. The art itself has borders and boundaries. So for people who break borders very readily, it contains them. It contains them in a symbolic circle of the art form. And by contrast, just a couple of pictures from the Royal Shakespeare Theatre production that came from India. And I include this one in particular because the director went around all the Indian villages and markets to find entertainers from the public spaces. And he auditioned them, brought them together, and created Midsummer Night's Dream. And in the production, they were speaking 26 different dialects. Brought it to the Royal Shakespeare Theatre in the UK, and it worked. It was a superb production. But they were ordinary, raw, shall we say, performers, rather than highly classical performers. I'd also mention briefly the Mahabharata, because I think it serves a very similar function for us as therapists, whether we want to draw the stories, dance them, enact them, or find the music in them. Because again, they have the universal themes we work with as therapists. This was a performance by a group of village actors who had their own Mahabharata company. And for the shy person to be able to work with the big gesture really helps them to grow. And they made me up as one of their demons. And what was very interesting, I mean, I just wanted to feel what this makeup was like, but the actual process of becoming this demon really allowed me to contact my own inner demons. Quite extraordinary, working from the outside in. And yet we're always talking in therapy, aren't we, of working from the inside out. Maybe in certain situations, the art form helps us to go from the outside inwards. And in the end, I was vanquished. Those are just two brief examples of what I call great theatre and great stories that I think within them integrate all the arts and all the art therapies. And they're also very good stories. They're stories that will captivate people's imaginations, and people find their own way of working, whether it's with the jealous themes of the twins, whether whether it's with the abandoned baby, and so on. If we look at all those great stories, there's no theme or role or interaction that isn't contained within them, which for me means that we can safely work with the metaphor of the arts therapies. And I think this is the essential contrast between the arts therapies, for example, and psychodrama. Both valid in their own right, but whereas psychodrama will work directly with the issue of the individual, the family, the group, the drama therapist and many of the other arts therapists, and certainly the play therapist, will work with it at a symbolic level through the healing metaphor. I want to mention, and I was very inspired by the dance movement presentation too, but who talked about early attachment and the neuroscientific contribution to the development of art therapies. A lot of my work at the moment is connecting with mothers of newborn babies or women who are pregnant, and to try and reverse the neglect and abandonment and the frustration by introducing ideas of creativity and the arts into the pregnancy process. So the idea of massaging our unborn child, we talk, we tell stories, and sometimes hold a two-way conversation, we now know that the unborn child is aware of all this. The unborn child will recognize the music played during pregnancy. They will recognize the sound of voices. And whereas at one time, midwives would say, well, the babies want to be quiet, you know, wrap them up and put them in a room and let them be quiet. Babies don't want to be quiet at all. Babies are social animals. They want to interact. They follow mother's face wherever it might be, and they respond to her voice, particularly if they've heard it during the pregnancy. So, as I said earlier, the circle of attachment enables the child to be safely held and contained and protected. And I think we sometimes forget safety and protection starts during pregnancy and immediately after birth. So sensory and dramatic play are contained in the safe circle, and sensory and dramatic play are the core of playful attachment. Attachment is a playful process. It's not a static thing. And if we look at the stages of developmental play from birth, we see it has these stages. So to start with, there's what I call consonant play, where the mother and the baby do the same thing. Maybe they rock together, but they're doing the same thing. They're in consonant, yes? And then we see the echo play, where the mother echoes the baby and the baby echoes the mother. Uh-oh, uh-oh. The beginning of conversation. That becomes a little more developed and it becomes more like mimicry. And then symbolic play. Now, once we get the start of the echo and the mimicry, we have the beginnings of dramatic play. And we need to remember that playfulness occurs with all the animals in the mammal world, yes? So, the term as if, which was first developed in the theatre by Stanislavski, is actually what happens within hours of a baby being born. A baby will seek out its mother's face and try to imitate the mother's expression. Slowly over the first few months, the baby and the mother are interacting as if they are each other. They're not just copying, they are behaving as if they are each other. And this is a crucially important stage to take place because it is the basis of learning about taking turns, about sharing. Most importantly, is to do with developing empathy. And certainly in the United Kingdom, one of the biggest issues about children and teenagers at the moment is the fact that children are growing up without being able to show empathy. So we've had a lot of cruelty, a lot of killings, a lot of tortures, first of all with teenagers and then in children much younger. So people are actually looking what has happened to, first of all, the development of empathy and secondly, the development of conscience. Not consciousness, developing a conscience, a sense of knowing what is good and what is wrong. So the sensory and the dramatic play are the two most important developments with the newborn child. And it supports my claim, which you may think is outrageous, that society is based on theatre rather than language. That it seems as if we imitate before we try to vocalise. And that imitation and dramatisation are what we are born with. And those enable us to understand others and enable us to understand a range of our own roles. And if we can integrate all the arts therapies together within the specialist team, we have a greater chance of actually making a difference in society rather than compartmentalising them. I just want to show a very few photographs of practice. Again, working with the circle, but this time working with the drum. And this became the focal point for this group of children, all with behavioural difficulties, who were referred to a project where we were able to do some quantified research in relation to drama therapy. If I had a carpet in my room this afternoon, I would have played with you like this. These are children on the autistic spectrum who are using shaving foam to make their handprints and footprints. And I think you'll agree, they're actually getting messy and they're also communicating outwards. They've also started their own body decorations with it. Group of adults with severe learning difficulties where we introduced a project called Over the Rainbow. And the staff said, no, they won't understand you. They won't understand about Over the Rainbow. They'll just know a rainbow. So we invited the group, and there were 26 of them, to think about what might be the other side of the rainbow. And the staff said, oh, they'll all draw the same thing. This is just one young man with Down syndrome. And every single member of the 26, apart from a pair of friends, drew something different. It was really very joyous. Back into circles, circular games, circular mandalas. And finally, just mentioning the projects we're doing in India and also in Nazareth in Israel with disadvantaged Arab children, working using a theatre model of drama therapy to build up their confidence and self-esteem. The Indian boys, for the first time, these were all boys sleeping on Mumbai station when the terrorist attack took place, came into their own when they started doing artistic work. And you see, this boy has actually drawn a tree very similar to his disabled hand and himself in the middle of the tree without any disability. So I will end by just repeating my provocative statement that civilization is based on theatre rather than language, from the very first as if of the infant to the great stories and plays. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sue, for a beautiful paper, a beautiful presentation. And any questions? Jsou nějaké otázky, dotazy? Chcete se někdo ptát?
I was just going to say, Victor, they can't allow me to say such outrageous things without challenging them.
Hello, I'm just curious about how your claim that society is based on drama rather than language is received, or has been received so far. Jenom by mě zajímalo, jak to vaše tvrzení nebo poznání, že ta společnost je založená na divadle, nikoliv na jazyku, jak je to přijímáno?
Yes, okay. Well, the trouble is with received knowledge, people don't challenge it. It's like the same as Freud's theory of sublimation. No one challenged it. And I said, well, actually, I think Freud got it the wrong way around. People sublimate their sexual urges because they're terrified of them. Therefore, they will perform instead, not that they escape into theatre. Do you see what I mean? Well, and I think we have all these orthodoxies, and nobody's theory is so precious we can't challenge it. Okay? And it was really my very early observations in the maternity unit, seeing this within hours, sometimes within minutes of a baby being born, it's seeking out the mother's face and trying to imitate her expression, that got me thinking about, well, maybe we need to rethink this, and maybe the idea of being born already dramatized, being able to seek out the other rather than only the self, might be a way forward. Okay, I mean, that's how it just evolved over a few years.
Is here any other question or challenge for Sue?
Yes, you mentioned that our perception today that there's this lack of empathy among young adults and teenagers. And I just wanted to know a little bit more specifically what you think that is linked to in early development, if you've, through experience, come up with some specifics.
Well, partly I think we assume it's okay for babies to be put into nurseries at an early age and not to have that early interaction. And I think the early interaction from birth to a year old is crucial in terms of the baby's social development, in terms of their secure attachment, but now we know in terms of their neurological development. This is what's so important. It actually makes a difference to the brain when there is this warm, loving interaction going on. We know that the mirror neurons now, we know for a fact, will reflect back what's going on in the baby's external world. So if the baby is seeing violence, they will receive violent images via their mirror neurons. And unless one has a full-time nanny like a grandma who will take full-time care of a child, babies at an early age are put with many babies and they cannot possibly have that very focused attachment care. So I think the vogue that we all have to have careers and we all have to work needs to be challenged for one thing. The feminists will hate me for saying that, I think. But, you know, I think we have choices. We can either just take a year off and set the baby on the right road or not. Because the lack of empathy question is getting very frightening in England. You know, when you find 7 and 8 year olds torturing toddlers, that is very scary. And we have to look at what's going on, both in the schools and in the playgroups and the preschool, in terms of how do we work with this? What do we need to do? We need to understand how play is the most important thing that happens when a child is born. Dramatic play, sensory play, and so on. Okay? Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
I love, Sue, thank you very much for the presentation, and I love your provocative question if the society is more theater-based or language-based. I would add one dance therapy provocation. Is pre-verbal really pre-verbal, or is verbal post-movement?
Indeed, I completely agree.
Poslední dotaz.
Děkuju. Já jenom teda nerozumím tomu, jo, překládat, jo, máš? Jenom nerozumím tomu, proč si myslíte, že drama a jazyk jsou odlišné věci. Já si myslím, že tato dichotomie neexistuje, jo? Že možná je důležitý...
Why drama and what?
Jo, můžu? Proč, že, jestli opravdu existuje ta dichotomie, drama a jazyk. Já si myslím, že drama se neobejde bez jazyku a hledání společného jazyka je často pěkný drama. A myslím si, že jsou jako paralelně vedle sebe třeba terapeutický směry, které se opírají o naraci, o příběh a vedle toho jako ty, které se zabývají jazykem. A myslím si, že tato dichotomie opravdu jako není.
I'm not saying they're two different things, but I'm saying that we do need to separate them out to understand them, because it's possible to have dramatic development without any language at all, but maybe with nonverbal communication, but through movement and sound and so on. I think the primacy we give to being verbal, and it is such an enormous test in examinations, the way people write, the way they use language, the way they talk, that I still think that nonverbal experience, nonverbal communication is a very neglected area. And I'm just so pleased that the dance movement people are really bringing that now to the fore. But when I'm talking about dramatic development, the child being born already dramatized, the child is already beginning to be aware of role. And it's the awareness of role that's important here. That I can be myself, but also I can imagine as if I am you and what you're feeling in your role. I start to be aware of my several roles, that some are public roles and some are private roles and so on. So that's where I think we need to emphasize the dramatic development in terms of the differentiation of several roles. Is that enough?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Probably yeah. Time is on.
Yeah, that is gentleman C. Jennings.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Last not least. Teďka poslední naše speaker je Bobby Stoll. Can I ask you to come on the stage? Bobby Stoll je velmi známá osobnost, která usiluje už posledních, mnoho let o vzdělání v arteterapii a o tom jako kontaktovat se, dělat společné věci na celém světě. Má velmi, velmi bohatý životopis a předám i slovo teďka. Bobby, you're welcome.
Thank you. Welcome art therapists, arts therapists, all of you. I don't sing. But I hope I can paint a picture, a word picture, with apologies to Sue Jennings, of the international scope and look of the arts therapies. I think, in a sense, I am perhaps summarizing this whole conference. And by the way, I am so pleased to see this conference in existence and thank the organizers immensely. I think it's great foresight. So let me talk about the peaks and pitfalls of developing arts therapy internationally. My bias will show because I am an art therapist and I have focused on that, but I think all of the other arts follow suit. And I suspect that everything I say today related to the art therapy development internationally will also apply to all of the other arts therapies and their associations. I want to say ditto. I agree fully with Sue Jennings' comments that we need to have our unique identities and we need to work together. From the beginning of time, man has expressed himself creatively. We can see that in the caves in Lascaux. We just saw one that Sue Jennings showed from India. It has been used to communicate, to heal, and to celebrate. Graphic art seems to be the most durable in that we can still see exactly what was presented or communicated in centuries ago. Today, we witness some of the same spontaneous creativity. We see it following disasters, such as the earthquakes we've just had in Azerbaijan, in China, in Haiti, after Chernobyl, after 9/11, after Hurricane Katrina in the United States. We've seen it in celebrations, when the Berlin Wall came down, in marriages, in births, after graduation, the end of apartheid in South Africa. And we see it as testament to healing and to recovery in the work being done in recovering drug addicts and alcoholics, in prisoners whose recidivism is greatly reduced when they participate. The enhanced living of cancer patients and medical patients pre and post-op, and trauma victims, both veterans and citizens, traumatized by all kinds of events. Spontaneous eruptions of dance, of song, of drawings, of rituals, flowers placed after Diana's death, the enormous celebration or ritualization of her death and her funeral. These dramatic outpourings we can witness. Efforts are immediately directed to instant arts therapies organizations. It worked. Look at this. Let's do it. But an arts therapy organization is not developed overnight. There are steps and stages. We're all in some one of those steps or stages. It's not like high-speed internet. It's not like instant coffee. It takes time. It takes organization. It takes an educational program. It takes a professional development or a professional association development, a code of ethics, some research. It takes literature to validate what we're doing. It takes credentialing, whether that is our own credentialing or licensing, as is required in the United States. Excuse me. Mother Nature calls. Collectively, we are the arts therapies. Uniquely, we have our own area of expertise. Music, visual art, dance movement, drama, psychodrama. In the United States, poetry. And bibliotherapy is coming in there, and I have a harder time with that, but nonetheless, they consider themselves an arts therapy. All share the same problems in developing. All share the same needs in developing. Gaining recognition is what it's all about. Gaining acceptance follows. In the 19th century, doctors were noticing that the drawings of patients were indicators of their decompensation or their recovery. Didn't know how to interpret that or what to do with it, but nonetheless, they accepted that that was so. In the 20th century, England had artists drawing and painting groups in psychiatric hospitals. We also had the same thing. These were really the forerunners of art therapy. They didn't call themselves art therapy. Nobody had heard the word. But what they were doing was beneficial. It was validated by the doctors in the hospitals. And again, as I say, they were the forerunners. It became clear that art was more than a diversion, more than an activity, and more than a diagnostic aid. It was possible to be a curative factor. Artists then began directing their work toward achieving treatment goals for the individual patients that they were working with. Art therapists, by necessity, when they came about, were pioneers. They were persevering against every kind of odd. Governments, regulating bodies, sometimes the doctors, all demanded a definition, all demanded a code of ethics, all demanded some validating research that showed the efficacy of what they were doing. But it wasn't available. That became the work of the art therapists to put it together. In 1983, I conducted a survey on behalf of the American Art Therapy Association, an international survey. I had done a good bit of traveling and knew some art therapists in other countries and had heard of others. And as I tried to amass a mailing list, a survey was sent to 570 art therapists, 4 associations, in 39 countries. I received over 1,200 responses from 45 countries over the next 5 years. each person who received it was passing it on, and I was still getting the results. That's extraordinary for any kind of research. In 1989, I developed an international panel at the American Art Therapy Association conference. And we had, at that meeting, 21 countries responding, 13 countries physically present. Others submitted reports. The panel took place, and we ran out of time because there were many more questions, many more needs than there was time to satisfy. So we met over lunch, and in that spontaneous lunch, the international networking group of art therapists was formed. I became key networker for the next 20 years. It grew to 15,000 unaffiliated art therapists in over 90 countries, plus the major affiliations or associations that were developing or had developed. The opportunity to follow the peaks and valleys of their development was thus possible. And so what I'm presenting today is my summary of what I collected. I cannot say that everything is absolute provable fact. Some may be last year's information. And in 1 year's time, you will be surprised at how much can be accomplished. So I may be behind the times in some cases. But in one country after another, the process of developing has been the same. It's a bit like that infant that Sue Jennings was talking about, that wants to mimic, that wants to develop as others. And in the process, they look to each other. But in some countries, there may be only one art therapist. Who do they look to? The networking group that we had was one way that they exchanged with neighboring countries and further developed countries. Attempts to develop educational programs, professional associations, and to gain professional recognition is the sequence. And it is a very predictable and parallel growth pattern that we see in one after the other countries. An inability to establish a common definition is very detrimental to growth. Minimum or vague professional standards of practice, a code of ethics, and a code of conduct are very essential. Diverse theoretical foundations, reflecting often personal or national practices, can be detrimental. If it's personal, you'll have trainers. And we have some countries still where this is so. That's so my tongue doesn't stick to my mouth. Lack of research on the efficacy of the discipline, and lack of credentialing or qualifying art therapists becomes very damaging to growth. Early development is often noteworthy in that it provides fierce competition, generally between the theoretical foundations. So the Jungians, the Freudians, the Lacan, the transpersonal, They will argue over who's right. They all may be, but they are overlooking the commonality of their discipline. If it's art therapy, it is the art making that is the factor in common, whatever the theoretical base. If it's dance movement, I suppose they may have theoretical differences. But if that gets in the way of developing, the whole cluster is set back. It provides too many voices at a time when unity is the one voice needed for the discipline. But in spite of the obstacles, art therapists do develop their professional associations. They do develop educational programs. According to what is acceptable in their country. I won't argue at all with how art therapy might be practiced in Bangladesh. But I can't expect that a Bangladeshi art therapist could come to the United States and get a job. But in their country, if they're accepted, whatever their standards are, if they meet those national standards, that is sufficient for them. We art therapists tend to be very poor salespeople. We are so delighted with this newfound healing method and recovery method and enriching method that we want to sell it, but we fail to sell the method as it can be used with the specific population with whom we are preaching. So if we're going to a school for developmentally delayed children, we certainly will be using a little different method and a little different process than if we were selling to a psychiatric hospital. And that would be different than if we were selling to the prison system or the school system. And in order to focus the discipline on the very population that will be served in that facility is vital to selling our discipline. Often it misses the mark. And the bottom line is availability of jobs and reasonable pay. Many countries run into major resistance when doctors, psychiatrists, are using art therapy diagnostically. Then they perceive art therapists as cutting into their territory. But they aren't using it in treatment. We are. That becomes a major stumbling block and is the reason why many countries who have many art therapists are unable to really get a foothold because the doctors are using art diagnostically. No question that it can be a diagnostic, but it can't be an intrusion. Diane Waller once said, art therapy is so culturally specific, it defies universal definition. Differences in philosophy of training and practice are incompatible. She is absolutely right. And yet, the similarities are that it works in attaching itself and modifying to many, many disciplines. It modifies to address individuals, couples, families, groups, to mental, physical, social, behavioral, medical, and academic settings. To all ages, from very young, a child as young as can hold a crayon, to the elderly. From homeless shelters, psychiatric hospitals, prison systems, schools, disadvantaged settings, homes for domestic violence and orphanage children, in Fortune 500 companies to resolve some of their administrative lack of cohesion. Why then should it not equally adapt to social, cultural, religious, and economic stressors or national organizations? It's up to the people in that country to adapt it to that country. In November 2009, on its 20th anniversary, the International Networking Group joined with the American Art Therapy Association and developed a new category of membership called International Member. So the networking group no longer exists. Our newsletter is no longer being published, but we now have an international corner on the American Art Therapy Association website and all of the resources available for international members.
I think it's time.
I want to say thank you and congratulate the Czech Art Therapy Association for their progressive work in putting this conference together. I especially thank you for inviting me. It's been my pleasure, and thank you very much. Let me give you a big hand.
Thank you. We have a few minutes. Máme pár minut na otázky, jestli někdo nějakou má. Na Bobby, předobědovou otázku nějakou, nebo...
May I add one thing? I intended to conclude it with that, but just before I left Los Angeles, I received an email from Goldsmith College in London that they had just established the ATOL, Art Therapy Online, an international peer-reviewed indexed linked journal that addresses theory, practice, and research in relation to art therapy as it is known and understood around the world. It has 7 editorial board members from the UK, peer reviewers, 16 from the UK, and 23 from 13 international venues. That brings us one step closer to my dream of a universal art therapy.
Thank you.
Bobby Stoll is going to stay here also on Sunday and Monday. So if you wanted to join this universal platform, or if you wanted to meet with her or show her where you work, then we can contact her. I will be with her basically all the time, so you can let me know, and I will help you. It is lunchtime now, and our simultaneous interpreters are going to leave. So we would like to thank the interpreters. Enjoy lunch, and let's meet again at 2 o'clock in the various workshops that we are offering. See you.